Thank you, Beth. And I'm pleased to be able to talk with you this afternoon. And we've got the rock star over here to bring people into attendance, Bill Atkinson. The importance of the laboratory in vaccine preventable diseases, prevention and control, I think has become increasingly important. And that was quite evident in the H1N1 response in terms of diagnostic characterization of the virus and providing virus for vaccine development. Another example that I really like is the polio eradication program and the sequences and molecular characterization of the virus that initially was viewed from the epidemiologists and the program people in that effort as academic interest, and let's move on to the important thing. And at this point in time, it's moved to the point that the program people are demanding the sequence studies, the strain characterization, which helps understand where the virus is and the status of the control effort. So it's really quite an amazing progression. What I'm going to do this afternoon is talk about the diagnosis, characterization, some about immunity, and vaccine safety, and with examples of how the laboratory sometimes helps identify problems, issues, and also provides a solution or helps solve the problem. I think the other theme is what I kind of alluded to in the polio eradication is that some of the laboratory tools are becoming increased, or many of the tools are increasingly powerful. And the opportunities and the ways in which the lab can help immunization efforts, I think, will increase over time as well. Many people have helped providing slides for this talk in the Division of Viral Diseases and Division of Bacterial Diseases as well at CDC. A very nice example of the challenges in diagnosis of vaccine-preventable diseases is several outbreaks of respiratory disease that were misdiagnosed as pertussis. And with substantial costs and effort in terms of control. In one of the outbreaks, nearly 1,000 individuals were sent home from work until their diagnostic testing was negative for pertussis. Over 1,300 people were given post-exposure pertussis vaccination. So substantial costs to the hospital and the public health and response was resulted from misdiagnosis of pertussis. Well, why was the diagnosis missed? Well, inherently, there's a difficulty in diagnosing pertussis in that the classic features of pertussis, the paroxysmal cough, vomiting, post-tussis vomiting, et cetera, come later in the course of illness, and the case definition requires 2 weeks. And at that point, early in the illness, the most sensitive test, or most specific isolation, is a little over 50%. As you get later in the course of illness, those tools are less sensitive. So there's inherently a problem of sensitivity. There also is a problem in the clinical specificity of the illness that makes it more difficult. In this particular series of outbreaks, it was the PCR that ended up with the false positive tests. And in the course of that, a couple features of the PCR assay become increasingly evident in response to that development of a two-PCR assay approach to pertussis diagnosis. The most sensitive PCR is the IS-481. There's multiple copies in the genome of these sequences, and therefore it's a sensitive, more sensitive assay. It also will pick up other Bordetella species, so there's a false positivity issue. The pertussis toxin PCR is less sensitive, but it gives good specificity. And the combination allows you to distinguish Bordetella pertussis from the other Bordetella. The other problem was interpretation of the results and calling the intermediate levels high CT values as positive when they should have been considered indeterminate, and also probably false positive from template contamination. Now, in response to this, another assay has been developed, and that's using protein-specific IgG antibody. And as illustrated in this slide, one of the proteins, the toxin, the antibodies to that have a relatively rapid acute increase and a rapid fall, such that positive antibodies at a sufficiently high titer are suggestive of recent infection and ongoing studies. And some of those will be presented in session L2 Thursday morning, will provide probably an additional sensitivity for detecting pertussis. The mumps session that just finished at 3 this afternoon identified another problem with another vaccine preventable diseases, mumps, and that's laboratory diagnosis. And this slide illustrates one or two of the features of that. One is the IgM assay in previously immune individuals, in this case vaccinated individuals, is less sensitive than in immune-naive individuals. Now, the other inherent in this data, but not illustrated on the slide, is that all IgM assays are not the same. And these particular series of assays are less sensitive than the assay CDC uses, which is an IgM antibody capture assay. And I think you could probably start with the rule that if it's not an IgM capture antibody assay, I'm not sure I believe the results for an IgM antibody with the other tests. The other thing that's interesting in this slide is the relatively high rate of isolation, 60 to 70%. And the fact that the PCR was less sensitive. In recognizing this, they went back to the laboratory, revised the PCR assay such that it now, in follow-up studies, looks about the same as the isolation rate. Again, making the point that all PCR assays are not the same. Characterization of the virus has also been a very powerful tool and helpful in our response to disease with vaccine-preventable diseases, as I alluded to with poliovirus. Now, measles in the recurrence of 1989 to 1991, the laboratory at CDC developed PCR, IgM assays, and sequence studies to genotype virus. And this has proved exceedingly helpful. Now, this technology has been transferred to all the regions at WHO such that we have pretty good up-to-date information on the sequences, the genotypes that are circulating in different regions. Using that information, we can infer the source of viruses of cases of measles and confirm that measles cases continue to be importations with some but limited secondary spread in the United States. Pneumococcal disease is a nice example of the importance of characterization of the agent. And this slide illustrates the introduction of pneumococcal 7-valent vaccine in 1999-2000. And note the marked decrease in cases. And most of these cases in the white are the effectively prevented the disease associated with the cases in the vaccine. But there was residual cases, and some of those serotypes actually increased over time. So the lab provided key information on what needed to be included in the vaccine and guided inclusion of the second phase of vaccine, which just recently introduced, the PCV13. And this slide illustrates the increase associated with PCV vaccine, not necessarily caused by it, but associated with it, of two of the serotypes of pneumococcus, the 19A and the 7F. And it illustrates that we should have substantial decrease in the residual pneumococcal vaccine with the PCV13 vaccine. Now, rotavirus was recently introduced, and similar to the case with the pneumococcal vaccine, it appears to have substantial impact on circulation of the virus, the concept of herd immunity. And with that, you create the bottleneck that, if the virus can, would presumably select or would favor strains that would be less susceptible to vaccine-induced immunity. And that's something that we're monitoring. Now, this slide illustrates some data that is consistent, but certainly doesn't confirm that that's happening. And in the green, we're looking at countries that use the Rotarix vaccine, the single strain of rotavirus, and two clusters of cases or detections of virus that is distinct, antigenically heterogeneous from the vaccine strain. We don't know if that's important in terms of these cases, i.e., the vaccine is less effective than these. We do know that the vaccine is effective. We don't know if it's less effective against this strain than other strains. But it's certainly something that's important to monitor, which we're doing. One of the things that has become evident in long prospective studies in Marshfield, Minnesota, and in other studies, is a decrease in antibody over time with measles, mumps, and rubella viruses. Now, whether or not that's important is yet to be determined. Certainly for measles and rubella, there's no evidence that that is important. In this slide, we're looking at percent of antibody that's less than or equal to 10, and then a subgroup of that, those that are actually antibody negative, less than a titer of 1 to 10. And what you see, looking at time after vaccination, an increase in both the antibody negative population and the population that has lower titers of antibody. This slide is data from vaccine efficacy, a study in the context of an outbreak in England. There's other data from the US that's consistent with this, that in fact, you have decreased efficacy of the vaccine over time. Now, they're looking at age, which in this particular paper correlates with time after vaccination. Now, it's possible that these differences are confounded by rates of exposure by different ages, depending on how well they can control for that in the evaluation analysis of data. But it certainly is suggestive, and I think the weight of evidence is certainly suggested that with mumps, over time, the efficacy of the vaccine decreases. On the other hand, it's also very clear that the vaccine is still effective. And if you look at the recent outbreaks in the New York, New Jersey, with little spread into surrounding communities, mumps outbreaks, and also with the outbreak in 2006, occur in settings where you have high exposure, high force of transmission. One of the issues that we've been facing for quite some time is vaccine exemptors. And certainly a significant part of that has been data suggesting an association between measles vaccine and autism. And in fact, there's been a lot of very nice studies, epidemiologic as well as laboratory studies, that I think really rule out this possibility. But this is one example, and this is looking at one type of autism in which there's GI illness associated with the autism, looking at intestinal biopsies, kind of a follow-up on a report from Wakefield and all, that they reported a high rate in cases versus controls. In this study, they found one in the case of 25 cases and one in controls of 13 controls, and clearly no association. So I think that's another area. Now, SSPE is another complication of measles infection, and there was some question about the possibility that vaccine might do that. In addition, what is the originating outbreak strain for the SSB cases? And this is a study published in 2005 by our measles laboratory, looking at the sequences of the virus detected in brains of SSPE patients. And using genotype data, they could confirm that five of the cases were, in fact, the circulating type associated with the outbreak or a resurgence of measles in 1989 and 1991. Not vaccine associated, and based on this data, suggested that the risk of SSPE was tenfold higher than previously suspected. Varicella is another vaccine in which there's potential adverse events, but confounded by natural disease, and rash or a varicella-like illness after vaccination, and this is looking at some data from our Varicella lab, looking at the virus detected and then doing sequence studies such that you can distinguish vaccine from wild type strain. And what it shows is that in the rash illness category, most of the viruses are actually wild type, some vaccine associated. So it's concurrent wild type infection around the type of vaccination, but also demonstrates the vaccine can cause that. Also, some zoster associated with vaccine, some secondary transmission in household, and some one documented case of meningitis. Not a serious problem, but it does demonstrate that it does occur. So in summary, I think the laboratory is an integral part, or should be an integral part, of vaccination programs. That the opportunities to use the lab to assist in vaccination program is increasing because of the really powerful tools that we have. So look for more good things to come from the laboratory to help you with your work to vaccinate children and adults. Thank you.